Get your films on with the Blurgs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurgs.
When a man with a 45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
Hello, and welcome to a very special First Looks episode of the Film Blurgs. My name is Brandon Norwood, a.k.a. Hero Protagonist, a.k.a. the True Father Joe's Kids, a.k.a. Poppy Chulo, a.k.a. the Glizzy King, a.k.a. Mr. Krusty, a.k.a.
the Lethal Protector,
a.k.a. I want a Subaru Outback. Why? So I can have mad strippers in the back giving shape-ups, a.k.a. my biggest pet peeve is sports because I don't like seeing grown men sweat on each other, a.k.a. Ruff McGruff, a.k.a. D's Nuts, and a.k.a. B. Wood the Magnificent. All right, so what makes this a special episode is Jeff's busy doing some other things, so you're going to get some stuff from me, not to fall behind and to keep giving you guys some great reviews, and let's just get into it. I'm going to start with some stuff I've watched lately.
What you watching? What you watching?
I said what you watching?
What are you watching?
Let's get into some TV, guys, because we got a lot of TV shows have come back. It's summer now. Summer's in full swing with TV. Let's start with Evil. Evil season 3 just dropped on Paramount Plus. First two episodes are crazy. For those of you who know, Mike Coulter became a priest at the end of season 2. And he was about to sleep with, Katja Harbor's character, Kristen. And those two find themselves in a precarious situation because of that in the first two episodes. And this season doesn't hesitate to dive right in. Like, Kristen comes out with the baseball bat swinging. She gives Ben the restraining order because he's trying to manipulate her daughters. Because, I mean, that dude's trying to manipulate everybody because he's a scumbag. Right now, it's just a setup. And I'll come back to it probably later. But yeah, Evil, definitely check it out. The Old Man just dropped on Hulu. The Old Man stars Jeff Bridges. And it has a killer's role, like Alia Shawkat is in it. Sounds like Jenny Slate's playing his daughter. We haven't met the daughter yet. The Old Man stars Jeff Bridges, and he's like an old retired CIA agent. He's in hiding for some reason, and then you find out why he's in hiding very quickly. John Lithgow's in it, and him and John Lithgow are going head-to-head. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't want to watch that. These first two episodes are directed by John Watts, and I can tell you off the rip, it is so good to see John Watts do some other stuff that's just not Spider-Man. Like, to see him do some directorial choices that are stylized, some shots that, you know, can take its time and do some push-ins or some dolly shots around some corners. It's so nice to see that indie cop car John Watts come back. And you know what, John Watts, start taking some more projects outside of the MCU. like, I know you're doing Star Wars next, but like, man, go back to your roots, keep doing stuff like this. Like, The Old Man, these first two episodes are super promising. I don't know if this is a continuing series or a limited series. I'll find that out for you guys next time. But as far as the show now, fan fucking tastic. Like, get that shit. Episode 5 of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
The third sister. She was a youngling. I knew she wasn't evil just because she was too desperate and too hungry. Like, I thought she was going to just turn and go to the good side, but it seems to me, I didn't see this coming. She was hunting Vader the entire time. I didn't know that. Did you know that? Have you been watching Obi-Wan?
Not yet. I hear it's amazing, though.
Once you get to episode 4.
Okay, so give it the first 4 episodes.
Yeah, this is our producer and engineer, Frank. I'm going to be asking him some questions from time to time.
First time on Film Blurs.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Moses is doing a good job. This should have been a fucking movie.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. Should have been a fucking movie. I like episode 3. I like this last episode, but like, this should have been, it could have been a nice, because it started off as a movie.
Right.
And they expanded it now to this limited series, but we'll see how that goes. yeah, man, I hesitate to say more other than she was a youngling, and we'll keep it at that. Because, you know, we got to see how this last episode is going to play out.
So she wasn't one of the younglings that obviously Anakin killed.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
But she remembers that.
She remembers that carnage. Gotcha, all right.
Yes, so, yeah. I don't hate it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't hate it. It's just, damn, bro. Sometimes there's stuff that doesn't need to be expanded upon. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right. I mean, I don't think they need to dumb down the audience. Let the audience just figure stuff out.
Yeah. So let's move on to Miss Marvel. Miss Marvel, man, I'm really digging these first two episodes. It's nice to see the MCU take a step back from superheroics and do a ground level show where, like, somebody like me or somebody like Jeff will, you know, be like, there's fucking superheroes running around and just geek out about it. And then this person gets to be a superhero. So it's cool watching this young Pakistani girl become a superhero and deal with her identity. Is literally like Kamala Khan stepped off the page. And this second episode somehow is even better than the first episode, because the first episode was pretty strong. So that, my friends, is Miss Marvel episode 2. Now, before we get into the main review, I'm going to get into some stuff I watched or rewatched just real quickly. I didn't know this before watching it, so this is partly my fault, but there's a movie on Netflix that came out this year called Fistful of Vengeance. Fistful of Vengeance was apparently a sequel to the Netflix show Wu Warriors. I didn't notice. I just watched it. So when shit started going on, I had no context, no clues to what's going on. It was just dumbass shit. Just dialogue, directing. This felt like a direct-to-video movie you would have saw in like 1993. And the needle drops, like the hip-hop needle drops, felt like it was trying too hard. I kept laughing. The sex scene, oh my God, that shit felt like it was from, what? Oh my God, it felt like, what was that movie? Underworld Part 2, all over again. I had to sit through that shit again. Man, so Fistful of Vengeance on Netflix. And then the only other thing I'll get into on what have I watched lately is Lightyear. I went to go see Lightyear on the 8-story IMAX, because this is Pixar's first movie specially made for IMAX with the 1.3 aspect ratio. It opens the movie like that, starts the movie like that, and there's like 10-15 minutes throughout the movie that it swaps back and forth in that aspect ratio. It makes the movie more epic. It feels big. If this to me now feels like a space opera. It played this better this second time when I saw it than when I saw it the first time in IMAX. One thing, me and Jeff left immediately after the screening once the credits started rolling, just because these screenings are late at night and they're in New York and we want to get back, and I have shit I got to do. It's not like we can stay out all night. Lightyear, for those of you who don't know, and I'm disappointed you guys didn't go see this past weekend, because it should have been a bigger hit instead of fucking Jurassic World again. Lightyear has 3 post-credit scenes, and one of them is literally after the company logo. So you literally have to sit through the end. The very last post-credit scene is in IMAX, but 2 of them pay off, a couple of jokes, and then the last one, God willing, sets up the sequel. God willing. But yeah, good job, you guys. You guys fucked over Lightyear. Go see it. That's all I can say. Now we're going to get into the main review.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for. The Film Blurt feature film review.
So our main review, fucking so many movies dropped this weekend on streaming. So we'll save Elvis for last, because, you know, this is the big one that everybody wants to hear about. And trust me, I got a lot to say. The movie's fucking 2 hours and 40 minutes. Yes, sir. So let's start with Father of the Bride. That dropped Thursday on HBO Max. It's the third iteration of this story. I did not know it was based off a novel. And as is, like, yo, listen, I'll always watch Andy Garcia because he's fucking Andy Garcia. But as far as the movie itself, I'm not mad at it. It shows off Cuban American culture and, you know, Mexican American culture. But, you know, if you've seen this before, you've seen it before, I can't be mad at it. It's nothing really to say. It's not bad. It's not good. It is what it is. I'll move now into Joseph Kosinski's new movie. Like, yeah, this dude put out 2 movies back to back because Top Gun is still killing it at the box office. He put out a new movie called Spiderhead. Spiderhead, ladies and gentlemen, is let's get into this movie. Spiderhead is about this pharmaceutical company run by Chris Hemsworth. And basically, they make a deal with like the U.S. government to start testing their products on prisoners. And these prisoners get to volunteer to go to this island. And the island in the compound is called Spiderhead. And at Spiderhead, they're testing these drugs, and these drugs have some crazy effects. And it gets very ethical on if they should be doing it and what they should be doing it. Like, the protagonist of the movie is Miles Teller. And this is Miles Teller's third time working with Joseph Kosinski, because he did Only the Brave, Top Gun Maverick, and now this. Journey Smollett is his love interest in the movie. You'll find out Journey Smollett is also a prisoner, and you'll find out what she did, because that's the big mystery. Is like, what did she do? And then you'll find out eventually, what did Miles Teller do? This is a good thriller. I this was something I'd probably see in a theater, but knowing how things are today, I'd probably be the only person in the theater. Joseph Kosinski, this continues his streak of just visually stunning films. I think the script could have been better, but as is, this is very solid. This is the first time where I was like, damn, Chris Hemsworth can actually act, man. I mean, he was great in that little part of Star Trek, but I always thought he was just a serviceable dude. You know, I just never thought he was of him as an actor, more as a personality. But Spiderhead, it is on Netflix. It's worth a watch, man. It's right up on there. It's only an hour and 40 minutes. It goes by very quickly. There's never a lull in it. And it's very satisfying at the end. So I can that comes with a recommendation, Spiderhead. And we'll get into Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. Good Luck to You, Leo Grande has Emma Thompson and this newcomer, Ian McCormick. This dropped on Hulu on Friday. It is about a woman who's recently widowed, and she's just coming to terms with being on her own now that her kids are grown and out. And she hires this sex worker, Leo Grande, and basically, it's like a stage play. You're watching the layers peel back between these two people, and you get to know them, and it gets messy, it gets ugly. But this goes hand in hand with another movie me and Jeff did earlier this year called X. X was about a bunch of dudes, a film crew making a porn, and how that kind of came to a head, because it's a slasher movie. This goes hand in hand with X, because the moral of the story here is you need to accept people for who they are and then just be horny, man. Because, you know, repressing things leads to very bad things. So good luck to you, Leo Grande. The sex in here is matter of fact. Emma Thompson's fully naked, and it is not like sexualized or anything. It's just, again, matter of fact. All this is just matter of fact. The way they show it, the way it's presented, it's very, you could tell a female woman directed this rather than a male, just by the way things are shot and presented and treated. And I don't know how a man would have done this better, to be honest with you, just because this feels intimate. It feels guarded in a good way, and I mean that in the best way possible. This first stage play, where this takes place in basically two locations, this is shot incredibly well. I forgot who the DP was, but we just thank you to my engineer and producer, Frank. He told me, good luck to you, Leo Grande. Who was the DP on that?
Brian Mason.
Hey, so shout out to you, Brian Mason. You shot the shit out that movie. I really like the lighting in it. Like, the way you put the lights in the room, the hotel room specifically, and had the fast fall off. Like, I haven't seen fast fall off that good in a long time. So thank you. Yeah, good luck to you, Leo Grande. This should be this is on Hulu. I'd recommend it. And we'll get into Jerry and Marge Go Large. This is based on a true story. It's about a retiree and his wife who basically juked the lottery and help out not only themselves but the whole town they're living in, because their town's basically falling apart and being like wiped off the map, as most small towns in America are. And it's basically just a feel-good movie. I mean, it's nothing special. It's generic. But, I mean, had this come out like 5-10 years ago, this would have been a hit, like a huge hit. It's basically, it's like Green Book, except better. And I was actually entertained by this. This is also proves why you don't fire the smart people. You always keep the smart people. It's so good to see Annette Bening in a movie again with, and to pair her up with Bryan Cranston. Perfect. All right, and now we'll get into our final topic of this very short episode, Elvis. This is Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. For those of you who don't know, because there might be some of you who never heard of Elvis, don't know who he is. He's
Really? Come on.
Look, man. Context is everything.
Yes.
Elvis is the king of rock and roll. He basically took rhythm and blues, country, and gospel, and just melded it all together in like a big melting pot. And like, he was like the first incarnation of pop music. Like, he was like basically pre-Beatles. Like, he was like a little, how could I say this? A little more country Beatles. Because the Beatles were a little more pop rock. Mm. And he's country pop.
Okay.
With a gospel edge. Like, right. That's how I describe Elvis. First off, I want to say, first and foremost, this kid, Austin Butler, I've only seen him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This guy is fucking amazing. Like, the screening I went to, Baz Luhrmann was there, Austin Butler was there, and the woman who played Priscilla Presley, Olivia Dijon, she was there. Austin Butler, this kid is going to be on fire. He should be nominated. Should he win? Well, let's see. It's only June. But God damn, I have not seen a performance like that. And then you know he's the real deal when during the Q&A, Baz says he got a call from Denzel. Shout out to Denzel. And Denzel said, hey, this kid who's auditioning for your movie, Elvis, he has a work ethic like no other. And you should definitely cast him. And Baz found that odd and strange just because he had never worked with Denzel, and he's just like, I'd never personally met Denzel, so it was crazy to get a call from a big, big name actor like that recommending this kid. And you see why. Like, this dude inhabits Elvis. It's just, it is uncanny, the way he walks, the way he talks, his mannerisms. It is nuts. First and foremost, I'm going to say the bad thing. Now that we got Austin Butler out the way, I'm going to say the bad thing about this movie. This movie's too long. It's way too long. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes. It doesn't need to be that long. Like, this still feels like it's watching a second cut rather than a final cut. It's like a second or third cut. Like, you could easily trim like 15, 20 minutes out of this movie. It's too long. For me, this movie moves quickly until it gets to Vegas, just because once you get to Vegas, I think if you're familiar with Elvis, you'll understand, like, that's basically the end, was when he got to Vegas. I didn't know the Colonel. The Colonel is basically his manager. The Colonel's a piece of shit, like a huge piece of shit. Tom Hanks plays this dude so well. This is like the first time I ever wanted to like reach into the screen and like choke out Tom Hanks. Usually he's like, oh man, that's could be my dad. Now it's like Tom Hanks. I'm like, God damn, you're a piece of shit. Always read the contracts. That's all I can say. Read the contracts. Have triple check them. Have anybody you trust read them over. Even get a public defender and have them look it over. Like, it was, that dude was a straight predator. It got so bad where this man was just pumping drugs into him just to get him on stage to perform. Like, my man was basically exhausted. As far as the music goes, I know, because everybody knows Baz Luhrmann. In addition to his hyperactive style and the flashy visuals and all that, which is there in this movie, and you're either going to love it or you're not going to love it. And as we said in a previous episode, the comic book transitions, it only happens once in this movie. And in context of the story, it works just because it's illustrating like, oh, this dude grew up reading comics and this and that. The music, however, every needle drop in this movie is basically perfect. There's parts of this where he copies The Great Gatsby, where he'll weave hip hop in and out. Like, Elvis will be walking down Beale Street and you'll see people dancing, and he'll weave in hip hop under some like Elvis songs. And you'll hear Doja Cat or somebody else rapping real quickly before it segs right back into Elvis's music. It works so much better here in context of the movie than it did in The Great Gatsby. And now I'm not shitting on The Great Gatsby because it worked good there, but it just works so much better here. This is Baz's first biopic, And for his first biopic, it works. This could be seen as a duology with The Great Gatsby. Somebody asked Baz Luhrmann a question that I always thought in the back of my mind is, which is, why do you always make tragedies? Because, you know, Elvis's story doesn't end well. Great Gatsby, if you're familiar with the novel, doesn't end well. So why does all of his movies always have a tragedy, you know, a tragic ending? He said he looks at his movies as the main protagonist reaching for impossible love. And that makes sense, just because this is why I say it could be a duology with The Great Gatsby. One, because Jay Gatsby was reaching for Daisy Buchanan. Daisy was just an aloof woman who didn't know what she wanted. So that was his downfall. Number two, here, Elvis needed and wanted love from everybody on earth. And that's just impossible. You cannot please anybody and everybody. And what, it's sad watching the movie because you realize how much his wife just loves him and how she's just not enough for him. And it's just like, nah, man, your wife's right there. You got it. Take it. Work on your marriage. And it's just, it was a combination of the fame and just the Colonel, man, the Colonel. And you're going to get to a point in the movie where you're like, why doesn't he just drop the Colonel? And he does, but then the Colonel fucks him. And because the Colonel fucked him, that's what basically got him addicted to opioids, just because at that point he was exhausted and he had to keep performing just so the Colonel could profit off of him. So basically the Colonel killed him, even though the Colonel says his fans' love for him killed him, which is bullshit. Austin Butler said something during the Q&A too that really caught me, which is he read some biographies of Elvis as he was researching. Because everything in this movie is meticulously researched. Like Baz even said, like every line in here, he tried to make sure, what did Elvis say this? And he'll find out that it did. He did, in fact, say that. You could see him tear up as he's talking about this. Austin Butler, he said that Elvis would have his backup singers or his bandmates stay in the hotel room with him as he fell asleep at night because he never wanted to be alone. And he kept asking, will I matter? Will I leave a mark on this earth? And Austin Butler straight up said, he's like, you know, all of us, that's what all of us want to do. We want to leave a legacy somehow, whether it's through your family or maybe through something notable you did. You want to leave something behind. And I was like, damn, yeah, it's true. We're all trying to make a print in this world. Because like they say in the movie, you're here and then everything's gone in a flash, you know. And that's basically why Elvis got into the business, because he listened to his pa, and his pa was right at the time. He's like, this could all be over in a flash. You know, you could go out, have your 15 minutes, and then you're done. But at least I did it. And I wish he really would have took that lesson at the beginning of his career. Is like, hey, I made this. I did this. That was enough. Even though he was still Elvis. He just didn't understand that. It was just a lot he was dealing with at the end of his life. That just, you know, as he... The movie doesn't show it, but, you know, they do say he had a heart attack. And for those of you who knew this, because this was something me and my friends would laugh about as a kid, you know, my man's died on the toilet. Like, he had a heart attack while he's taking a dump. So Elvis comes with a high recommendation. It ain't perfect just because it's too fucking long. But I mean, there's parts where people stood up and started clapping. I'm like, guys, sit the fuck down and shut up. Yeah, this is just Elvis fans, man. Like, Elvis fans are going to eat this shit up. And I'm surprised his wife and his daughter, Lisa Marie, and his wife, Priscilla, like the movie, just because they do use a lot of hip hop and weave it in and out of the movie. In context of the movie, it'll make sense. Elvis, highest recommendation. If you can see it, it's getting a release in Dolby Cinema. Definitely see it in Dolby Cinema. That Dolby Atmos sound, like the way the movie's mixed, you're going to be like sitting there in the concerts. You'll hear everything. Austin Butler, he's going to eat off of this. Now I understand how he probably got doomed because of this movie. Like, Bass probably showed Denny the dailies. Fantastic movie. Any questions about this movie you have?
Cinematography. Frank? What was that like? Because a friend of mine, Mandy Walker, did the cinematography on it.
It's excellent. I mean, it's Baz. Baz's movies always look good. It's hyperactive.
Okay.
Have you ever seen a Baz Luhrmann movie?
I don't know. Name some.
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, okay. He did Moulin Rouge.
Okay.
Great Gatsby. Australia was not good.
Australia, Mandy worked on as well.
Yeah, that movie.
Because she's from Australia. And she also did Hidden Figures, I believe.
Okay.
So she worked on Australia, and you're saying that wasn't... Because sometimes, like the movie The Cell, remember that with Jennifer?
Yeah.
The cinematography, it was a beautiful movie. Yes. I hated it.
Yes.
But I liked looking at it.
Yes, and that's the one thing I'll say about Baz. Even when I don't like his movies, I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad I watched it just because visually...
It's like, just nice, like eye candy.
I mean, my dude has a hyperactive style. Okay. Like, you're either going to vibe with it or you're not. Just, there's going to be parts of it where you're probably like, all right, slow down, man.
Mm-hmm.
Take a beat. Because it is like... His style is basically you gave like a 15-year-old pixie sticks and he just went wild.
Okay.
So, but it works.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always my go-to is the cinematography. Is it nice to look at?
And no, it's then, a great looking movie, man.
And but the story also carries it too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Yeah, because you're going to get invested. Like you see him talking to B.B. King at points and you're just, you're seeing Kelvin Harrison Jr., another great actor, as B.B. King. And I'm just like, damn. I hope Baz does a fucking B.B. King movie guy. And
that's neat. That's a great idea.
Little Richard's in it. I don't know the actor who plays him, but he does Tutti Frutti.
Good job.
Yeah.
Was it dubbed?
No. That was
really the actors. Butler did his own singing?
Yeah. Like, really? Austin Butler did his own singing. There's parts where it is Elvis's song and they'll dub him over, but for the most part, that was Austin singing.
So what's like a Joaquin Phoenix singing Johnny, like when he did Johnny Cash?
Oh, man, I think like, that was good. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
I like this performance better.
Wow.
Just because you could see this kid is giving it his all. And I read an interview with him in GQ. He said his body shut down 3 weeks after filming just because he was so into that role.
Wow.
They had to rush him to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild.
So, so Denzel was not kidding where he was like, yo, this kid's work ethic is crazy. Yeah, so this is...
That's cool.
This is one of the movies of the summer I hope does well. I mean, it's not a franchise. It's not a comic book. And I just don't know. And I hope it does well just because I'm tired of...
Sure, sure.
You know?
I like what you said about everybody liking you and being obsessed with that. There are a lot of celebrities like that. If everyone likes you, you're probably doing something wrong.
Right.
You also, to go back to Spiderhead, that was based on a short story by George Saunders in the New Yorker.
They have their logo at the beginning of the movie.
Called Escape from Spiderhead.
Yeah.
That was what that was. It's amazing where scripts are coming from these days. A short story in the New Yorker? Really?
Look,
from
man.
2010?
You know what, man? I'll take it because, like, shit like Jurassic World's making money. And then you see shit like Spiderhead and you're just like... I'd rather see that, even though Spider-Head ain't great, I would rather see more of that than another fucking Jurassic World.
Yeah, yeah. It's just become this franchise thing. It's just pumping these
things. Yeah, yeah. Where it's no heart put into it.
Yeah. When the commercials are better than the movie itself, you got a problem.
Yes, yes, man, yes.
My only thing was, what was the cinematography like?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Baz called it, in, like what you said about him liking, everybody liking him. He's like, yeah, the protagonists in my movies are always reaching for impossible love. That's why it's a tragedy. Right, I was like, that makes sense, because Romeo and Juliet's like that.
Exactly.
That's it. Like, Great Gatsby and Elvis make a good duology. And then I would say Moulin Rouge and Romeo and Juliet make a good duology, because those are love stories. Right, and these are different types of love stories. These are like... More about, like, you know, capitalism and how that influences people. And I mean, there's always a love story at the center of Great Gatsby and Elvis. But, like, it's about excess, too. You know what I mean? Right. Just excess.
Does that change the person?
Yeah.
That's good. Good stuff, man.
Yeah. And that is it for this special short episode called First Looks with Brandon. Might do another one next week. Stay tuned. See you guys later. We're the Film Blurred. I'm Brandon Norwood, and I'm the motherfucking protagonist.
I'm the protagonist.
I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. He Who Remains.
Don't come at us. It's just fucking movies.
You've been listening to the Film Blurs podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best.
It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindFireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.